This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. And today on the line with me, I have Tony Ching, Member of Parliament for Kulai, as well as former Deputy Education Minister, and Chan Sun Seng, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Thank you very both for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
So we are living in interesting times. Right now, under this movement control order that is currently still in place, children have to stay home from school. And there have been a lot of concerns raised over the impact that this is going to have on their education, because we have no idea as yet when this coronavirus outbreak is going to subside. So right now, under the MCO, have there been coordinated efforts to support these schools and educators in continuing the education initiatives that either of you are aware of? Perhaps, YBTO, we could start with you.
Okay. Of course, I think if compare Malaysia with Singapore, I think Singapore is more organized in terms of preparing themselves for this circuit breaker. Because you can see that before they actually enter into this movement control period, the first week of April, they have one try day whereby all the schools are closed for one day so that they can test out the study or home-based learning procedure. So compared to Singapore, we are rather unprepared. So I think there are things that we could have done to make sure that we are actually more well prepared for this home-based learning. But of course, I think it's also unfair to compare Malaysia with Singapore because, first of all, they are smaller, population is smaller, geographically they are also smaller. But hereby in Malaysia, I think in certain areas, for example, in the rural area, especially in Sabah, Sarawak, the area whereby internet access is still a big problem, and therefore home-based learning would be very, very challenging for the kids.
And Sun Seng, what's your take on this, particularly drawing from the experiences of the schools that TFM looks at?
I think the key priority at this time has to be that we need to do whatever we can to ensure that learning doesn't stop, right? And I think there are three sort of key things that we're looking at this point in time. Number one, it's how do we support our students and teachers to ensure that learning is effectively happening at this time? Number two, how do we ensure that collaboration is happening? Collaboration across all sectors is ensuring that learning from home is successful. So meaning that teachers need to work more closely with parents than ever before. How is the ministry working with the private sector? How is the ministry working cross-collaboratively across the civil service? And then finally, how do we imagine or reimagine what schooling or education looks like for this time and also moving forward? I think specifically to the point about impact on what is happening. A lot of kids don't have access to digital devices. They don't have access to the internet. The Ministry of Education survey showed that at least 40% of kids don't have access to a device at all. And even the kids who do have access to devices, they may be sharing that with their parents. They may be sharing that with other kids at home. And so as a result, what we've seen is typically what happens for online learning. So these are sort of these classes that happen through Zoom or happen through Google Hangouts or Microsoft Teams. Typically what we see is less than 40% of kids are turning up for those online learning lessons. And teachers have to figure out how they are addressing learning in other means. So synchronous online learning, but also through asynchronous methods. And what we really need to figure out is also how do we actually use traditional analog methods, right? Can we send workbooks, worksheets to kids through existing supply chain methods?
And what do you make of the other methods that the government has started to look at? For example, broadcasting through dedicated TV channels. You know, how effective are these, you know, in reaching children who may not otherwise have access to digital learning facilities?
I think it's a good effort. Definitely it's a good effort. But I think they are also having a big problem. It's because that the school closed down nationwide. So it's the primary school and also the secondary school. And then we have various subjects. So the program that actually is preparing on the RTM now is actually only for a very limited subject. And it's only for certain grades. And it's also for very, very limited subjects. Until today, I haven't seen any program targeting the students for the vernacular school. So which would be, which putting the vernacular school students in a very disadvantaged position. So I think it would be a good effort. And I hope that we can see that actually MOE will prepare more content so that you can cover more grades and also more subjects.
I totally agree. I think that the ministry and everyone is doing their best to make sure that they can reach people with the resources that they have available, and people have mobilized as fast as possible. But the reality is that it is not reaching all kids, right? So if we're talking about vocational education, if we're talking about special needs support, and I think that this it goes back to that point about how do we ensure that we're really working together with everyone across the board. And so I think it's at this point in time, private companies, NGOs, public citizens stand ready to assist the MOE at a moment's notice, right? And so how does the MOE work effectively with all of the people that want to collaborate and sort of like open up the solutions to ensure that it's not just the MOE, the burden isn't just on the MOE, and that it's all our responsibility to play a part. And so can the MOE open up? Can private companies provide resource? Can NGOs mobilize? Can local communities work together to provide solutions for their communities? One of the things that we may need to consider, especially if the MCO continues to extend, is that it won't be realistic to expect kids to be fully supported just through online learning and just through things like the television or even the radio, although those are necessary solutions to be in place. But we may have to consider things like, can we... So if we take groceries as an example, like a head of a household can go out to get groceries once a week. Can we open up physical school locations with a very limited number of teachers who are able to provide support in the sense that parents can come and pick up work for their students? Maybe the schools can be open to loan out the existing netbooks that exist and devices that exist in school. And schools can be a source where like the head of household could come, pick up resources that they can bring back to their kids and then bring back the work or the learning materials when that is done as well. So we don't reopen schools where people gather to learn, but it's just a distribution center for learning materials.
And I mean, the role of parents is also arguably one of the most important at this time, right? What kind of measures are in place to support them and to help them facilitate their children's educations, knowing that many of them in rural areas are probably also worrying about bread and butter issues, putting food on the table? You know, what kind of measures are in place for them?
I think it's very important for the MOE to actually to come up with the home-based learning guideline. If we are using Singapore as an example, they make sure that in their guideline, they actually prepare a Q&A for the parents, and they told the parents that you are not supposed to be the tutor. So I think many parents actually feel very burdened. I myself is one of them that during this home-based learning, because it seems like we now become the tutor for our children. We need to guide them, we need to coach them, we need to sit with them during this home-based learning, especially when there are classes online. But that shouldn't be the intention of home-based learning, because we must understand during this MCO, I believe that quite a huge number of parents, while they are staying at home, but perhaps they got works to do as well. They are answerable to their client, to their customer, and perhaps answerable to their manager or to their bosses as well. So the whole concept of home-based learning, I think first of all, we need to get it right. Home-based learning doesn't mean that we take the offline classes to online, and doesn't mean that the parents should now become the tutor for their kids. And then other than that, I think we must also acknowledge that there are certain family, perhaps their family environment is totally not suitable, and it's very difficult for them to carry out the home-based learning at home. And therefore, for example, in Singapore, again, if I may use that as example, even though during this movement control period, but actually certain students can still go to school so that they can use the computer at school. Something we can consider now is, for example, during MCO, if the school have devices, have laptop, have iPad, they should actually consider to lend it out to the students so that the students can use it at home if they don't already have it. And for certain certain cases whereby the home is so unsuitable for them to carry out home-based learning, whether we can allow certain numbers of teachers to go back to school and then allow those students to come to school while the classes will still be conducting online and they can do their homework in school. This is actually to, right, we must make sure that we don't have a huge number, because if you have huge number of students going back to school, that defeat the purpose of MCO. So I think we need to support parents. We need to make the concept of home-based learning right. Home-based learning doesn't mean that nowadays the parents need to play the role as teacher or the tutor, but also at the same time we must assure that assure the parents that during this home-based learning or during this MCO, we are still taking care of the education of the children.
I'm speaking with Tony Ching, Member of Parliament for Kulai, as well as former Deputy Education Minister, and Chan Sun Seng, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. After this, talking about more post-MCO guidelines for schools. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Tony Ching, Member of Parliament for Kulai and former Deputy Education Minister, as well as Chan Sun Seng, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Now, earlier we were talking about how the government can support teachers, educators, as well as parents, but now we're looking forward to a period when the movement control order might be lifted. Say, you know, the MCO does end on April 28th, which is when it is set to be lifted right now. There is the high chance that parents may not want their children to go back to schools. So how do we go about implementing things like social distancing, you know, post-MCO COVID-19 guidelines for these schools? You know, what kind of measures would be feasible? Sun Seng, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it's what needs to come into place are very specific guidelines about how to manage social distancing in school and making provisions for kids to continue learning from home during this time. So there's a number of ways that that could look like, and I think the ministry actually is really, really investing to figure out how social distancing could look post the MCO. But what that could look like is, number one, a staggered return to schools. So when the MCO kicked in place, teachers, it was school holidays, and so many teachers and many students have returned to their hometowns. So if we reopen school in one shot, that means we're going to see a surge in travel across the country, right? And we definitely want to avoid that. And so thinking about how do we ensure that even before schools reopen, maybe teachers are going back to specific locations by batches and staggered across across a number of weeks. And the same for students. The second thing that we then there's all the basic sort of guidelines for social distancing in school. Are temperatures being checked? Are kids being able to wash their hands? Are hand sanitizers available? Are there even sinks, enough sinks? Mm. We may need to install more sinks across schools. And then we also have to consider like sick leave policies. We have to ensure that we have space in classrooms for kids to be separated or distanced. And so what that may look like is we may need to enforce, similar to how corporates have business continuity plans where you have 1 week on and 1 week off, maybe kids will come back and spend a week in school and then they'll go and learn from home for a week at a time and take turns. Mm. Doing that. But another key thing that we have to ensure is that we invest in school leadership and ensuring that they're able to support crisis management. So what happens if a kid or a teacher in your school becomes infected with the virus? How do you ensure that there is a stable management of ensuring that everyone gets tested and that nobody panics and that things can go on in a controlled manner as well?
We also do have to place some focus on, say, students who are at the cusp of transitioning over into, say, from secondary school into university, right? And we have seen some national exams, you know, the UPSR and the PT3 have both been cancelled, the SPM and the STPM, some has been postponed, some of the exams have been cancelled outright. So once these students do return to school in whatever form, you know, in staggered batches and so on, how do they catch up on the month or so that they've lost in learning time? Is it even possible at this point?
I think it will be quite challenging, especially for kids. They are from the B40, those kid children from the rural area, because I believe that the home-based learning quality, the quality of the home-based learning at their, that they will receive or experience would not be as good as those children and at the middle F40 or the top 20 family background. So definitely, I think it will be quite challenging. But I think that we shouldn't, as parents, shouldn't be too concerned about it as well. For me, I think to abolish or to cancel UPSR and also PT3 for this year, I think it's totally fine, because nowadays we do not need to see, use or refer to the UPSR result in order to go to Form 1. All kids after their primary standard 6, they can go to Form 1 automatically. If their BM, unless their BM is not good enough, then perhaps they need to go to remove classes. Other than that, actually, I think UPSR doesn't actually affect our future that much. Same goes to PT3, because now we use the school-based assessment, then you would basically know that whether the students are more suitable to go to take whatever subjects that they want at Form 4. So I think at this moment it's perfectly okay for us to abolish UPSR and also PT3 at the moment. And even in certain countries, they have already announced that they might actually adjust the syllabus and perhaps to cancel out certain chapter, certain portion of the syllabus, so that when the kids, they enter any national exams, they won't be disadvantaged.
So, YB, do you think that this MCO is going to facilitate a wider acceptance then of school-based assessments?
I think we need to be prepared into a situation whereby home-based learning will continue even after MCO. I think that is very likely to happen, like what Sun Seng has already told us. So I think that is very important for the parents. I think especially from primary school to secondary school, I don't think it would be a big problem. From Form 3 to Form 4, I don't think it would be a big problem. And now SPM and STPM, since that the MOE has already decided to postpone it, I think they should be able to still cover most of the syllabus. But it would be challenging for those kids doing science, because if a lot of their lesson or in their syllabus involve a lot of like experiment, they need to go to Magma in order to finish cover that part syllabus, then I think home-based learning is definitely something that we need to try to overcome, or at least allow them to go back to school after MCO.
So I think, like, if we go back to the principle of we need to do whatever we can to ensure that learning doesn't stop, I think that an opportunity arising out of this is actually the opportunity to reimagine what education looks like for this time and actually moving forward. And so the Ministry of Education has for the longest time actually tried to shift away from high stakes academic examinations and to put into place more holistic classroom-based assessments that doesn't just focus on knowledge, but also skills and values that students are developing in order to be prepared for the 21st century. The unfortunate reality is that public acceptance of that has been difficult, and so and fair enough, right? If you're a parent, you've been so used to being able to assess a child's quality of education by the letter grades that they receive. Do they get an A? Do they get a B? Do they get a C? And how will they know whether their kids are actually doing well in school or not? But actually, there are many, many ways to measure that, and there are many holistic ways in which that can be measured. And the opportunity that we have now, with parents being involved in students' education, is that they can begin to learn what that looks like to assess a child's holistic capability. And so I think that what we can potentially imagine at this point in time is how do teachers, number one, be able to be upskilled to utilize and to deliver 21st century learning in this kind of environment, working alongside parents to be able to deliver that, and being able to really see that the purpose of education is not about examinations, and the purpose of education is really about learning so that you be a human being that is living a fulfilled life and contributing to society, right? I think that that's the opportunity that we can have here. And so to give a practical example of what that could look like, right? So at this point in time, there are classroom-based assessments that happen across schools. So from Form 1 to Form 3, you have classroom-based assessments. What teachers can actually do is that they can identify a set of those assessments and create projects based on those assessments. So what could happen is that a teacher assigns a project to a student that covers those different forms of assessment. So let's say an English assessment might be being able to write a letter. But there would be many different types of those assessments. And then kids would then go back from that week of school, then go and spend a week at home. And they would spend that time working on their project, working on the project that the teacher has assigned to them. And then they would come back to school the next week, and then they would be able to present the product of that time from home and be able to communicate that product and be assessed, not just on what they've created, but their ability to communicate that, to receive and give feedback on it. And so that could be an example of what the merge between home-based and school-based learning could look like at this point in time, but also highlighting the importance of project-based assessment and performance-based assessment and shifting away from examinations. But what we need to do in order to enable that is really to invest in our teachers and our parents, because our teachers supported at this time to deliver that kind of learning. And so that's why we see a lot of what the ministry is trying to do, and a lot of what Teach for Malaysia alumni working with the ministry on, is ensuring that teachers know how to use digital learning. So our alumni work with UNICEF and they work with Google Education to ensure that teachers are trained for this stuff. But the next step beyond just learning the digital tools is learning how to use effective project-based learning and performance-based assessments so that we can shift away from high-stakes academic examination.
So, Webby, what are your thoughts here? Aside from the knowledge and skills that Soon Seng outlined, what kind of policy might we potentially hope for from the MOE that could support teachers in this push towards a more specialised education system away from wider public exams?
Okay, I think first of all, home-based learning will be there for quite some time. So I think perhaps one of the policy or one of the guidelines that should be prepared by MOE is about home-based learning is not just about going to internet or using the having online classes, but also you need to have offline project, like Soon Seng has pointed out. So for example, when we talk about home-based learning, actually in many countries, they actually limit online learning to 2 hours or perhaps like 20 minutes, the maximum 20 minutes for screen time, and then 20 minutes perhaps it's like offline learning, and then 20 minutes is a break, for example. So I think that type of policy we need to come out rather quickly, so that meaning that nowadays the home-based learning would not be like you expect the kid to sit in front of the computer or the laptop for 4 hours, like or from 8 a.m. until like 12 p.m. I don't think that would be good for the kids as well. And other than that, I think it's very important for us to move away from exam-based education, and we need to move forward towards like having more focus and discussion on the education for the IL 4.0. And therefore, for MOE, I think in the year 2019, we have actually abolished the standardized exam for standard 1 until standard 3. Next step forward, I think we should consider to abolish the standardized exam also for standard 4 and perhaps until UPSR or whatever. They will request that for us to abolish UPSR, but I think at this stage we do not need to make the decision now, but I think this will be a very good period for us to think about, can we do without the exam, and then so that we can focus more on the individual progress of each individual kid.
I think another key thing in order to enable that is how is the ministry able to, through the districts, empower school leaders to be able to have a strong vision of what high quality education looks like in a school-based assessment environment. And we need to strengthen school leadership to be able to not only be able to manage the logistical aspects, but also what this reimagination of education and assessments looks like, so that they can work with their communities for them to understand that their kids are learning and the ways in which their kids are learning.
Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us this morning for this conversation. I've been speaking with Tony Ching, Member of Parliament for Kulai, as well as former Deputy Education Minister, and Chan Soon Seng, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. This has been The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, encouraging you to stay home during this period of movement control.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.